Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. No one gets to sail through life free of turbulence. What separates people who shake it off, bounce back, and stay positive from the bitter, never satisfied, and defeated ones? Acceptance. Accepting an unexpected job loss or financial setbacks, a friend's betrayal, a child's struggle with addiction, a serious illness, or even the annoying traits of a loved one can be challenging. To make it easier, the book we're discussing today offers insights, intentions, and strategies for practicing acceptance. And this includes around parents, a significant other, children, siblings, co-workers, friends, and foes, of life's adversities and the limitations of getting older, and perhaps the toughest of all, accepting yourself. Our guest today is Daniel Miller, author of the book, The Gifts of Acceptance, Embracing People and Things as They Are. He is also the author of a related bestseller, Losing Control, Finding Serenity. Like most compulsive controllers, Danny was always driven to succeed. He graduated from UCLA with honors in business administration and finished in the top 5% of his class at the UCLA School of Law. However, he ultimately found a different and more gratifying kind of success, an internal core sense of well-being. He now writes and speaks about the profound benefits of letting go of control and practicing acceptance. Hello, Danny, and welcome to the Pathway Show.
Hey, Paul. Nice to be here and be on your show.
Well, let's start by asking you to define acceptance for us.
That's a good question because it's I think, quite different than most people may think. It's almost easier to describe what it's not. I think it's important. With acceptance, particularly accepting difficult challenges and difficult people, we are not excusing or condoning what they say or do. That's important to know that. What we are trying to do is accept the underlying reality of their nature or whatever the situation is, and ideally to do so without any kind of judgment or resentment. So we're seeing things as they are and not as we want them to be. And by doing that, and I can share some ways to get to that point, is we come to a more neutral mindset, a non-judgmental mindset. And that allows us, and this is really key, that allows us to really shift our focus from what might be bothering us about a person or thing to what our real choices are that are best for us under those situations. So it's sort of aligning the choices that are best for us with the underlying reality of what we're dealing with.
Now, it seems to me that it makes such great sense to accept things the way they are. If we do that, we're going to make better decisions, we're going to be more realistic, we're going to be more objective. Why is it so hard for people to accept the way things are?
Well, one of the main reasons, quite honestly, there are certain obstacles. One is fear. And the acronym I like to use for fear, there's a couple of them. One is future events already ruined. Another one is false evidence appearing real. So that whole thing about fear sort of distorts how we view and see things. So we have to find ways to reduce or diminish our fears in order to proceed towards acceptance. Another difficult challenge, and what I call an obstacle to acceptance and as well as to control, is high expectations. You know, my nature has been, less so now, is I tend to expect things from others, you know, or of life. And what I like to say, when you are expecting, you cannot be accepting. It just can't be. When you are controlling, you cannot be accepting. So we have to find ways to reduce, or I say moderate, our expectations of people or things if we want to have a chance of practicing what I call this true acceptance.
You know, it seems to me that one of the problems, and you point this out in your book, is the idea that we should be able to fix anything, that we should be able to solve any problem. But you write towards the end of the book that one of the problems we can't. What is this tendency to solve problems? I mean, that's about the ego, right? I mean, we're good at problem solving, so we turn everything into a problem. Does that sound
well,
right?
Well, I don't know if we turn everything into a problem, but we're good at problem solving, and we think we know the best way or the right way for others.
Right.
When we really don't. I think what I've come to learn in this whole process, on this journey, is I really don't know what's right or best for others. And once I can start to realize that, it's really helpful. Because it allows me to move towards acceptance. And the one word I use for that is humility. We need to be more humble and less smug or arrogant. And I know in my own situation and dealing with my children and family, earlier I would, with my son or daughter, is I can tell you stories on this, is, you know, what worked for me, I felt that's going to work for them. I didn't hesitate to let them know. Rather than let them find their own way and find their own path and deal with their own obstacles and gain some kind of self-independence and resiliency, which is so important in life, especially today, you know, the way things are today.
You know, you talked about expectations, and it seems like somehow our ego has the tendency towards expecting that there's going to be some kind of final solution to some desire or other situation in life. We're going to find the one, we're going to find the right house, we're going to find the right job, we're going to live we're going to live happily ever after. Talk about expectations. You know, toward the end of the book, you write that practicing acceptance and embracing impermanence are related.
Yes, definitely. Well,
impermanence means there's never any final solution, right?
That's right. Well, I don't know if there's a final solution. There's no set way. In other words, the only thing that's constant in life is change, you know, and this is more the Eastern, the Buddhist philosophy, I think, is, you know, I have a poem in the very beginning of the book called The Space Between, you know, and sort of what that relates to is we have our expectations or life as we would like it to be. And then on the other side, we have the reality of life as it really is. And that gap between the two is where our suffering lies. And with acceptance, I believe that acceptance is a way that we can sort of close that gap so that they're more together, that we become accepting more of this reality. Because there is no final solution. I mean, in a way, it might be boring, you know.
Right.
You know, life is fun because there are challenges and because there are things always to learn, you know, about ourselves, about our habits, about the world in general. And if everything was given and set, you know, I think it'd be pretty draw and drab, you know, personally.
Right, right.
But it doesn't really, because we don't have the choice, because bottom line, and like in my first book, Losing Control, Finding Serenity, we can't control life, you know, and when we try to control life, or it's like, you know, when we try to put a grip on life, what I equate that to is if you can envision a rapidly moving conveyor belt, and if we try to grab onto it, we're either going to be burned or dragged along, and you know, and that's what sort of excessive control brings to us.
Right. You know, you talk about the gap between our expectations and the way things are, and how that gap causes suffering. This reminds me of the Serenity Prayer, which you talk a lot about in the book, and you write that you start each day with the Serenity Prayer.
Yes.
So the Serenity Prayer goes, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Yes.
How often do you say this prayer?
It's the first thing. I'm out of bed on my knees, and that's my prayer. About 15 minutes later, after I do my warm-up exercises, because I'm playing tennis, usually I'll go outside, and I have a favorite olive tree in the backyard, and I'll just sort of spread my arms and just say the Serenity Prayer. It's at the very start of my day. And, you know, the Serenity Prayer is well-known, and people hear about it and try to do it. What I've tried and what's really worked best for me, Paul, is when I'm saying it, if I can focus on the specific things I might be dealing with right now or in that day. So I can apply those beautiful phrases, you know, what I can't change, I have to accept, or and the courage to change things I can, focus, okay, what's within my true power to change? And it's fantastic. I mean, it really works, and it does bring serenity to me. You know, things can go awry during the day, as it does for all of us, but when I can remember, even in those times, if I can come back to the words or the thoughts of the Serenity Prayer, it settles me down. So it's probably last 15 years, that's been my go-to, so to speak.
You know, this idea of accepting the things we cannot change, that's pretty clear. And there's a lot of things that we worry about that we can't change. We can't change other people.
Yes.
We can't change the past. And we can't really change external circumstances on a global scale to any great extent as an individual. But the one about the courage to accept the things we can change, as you point out in the book, that's mainly focusing on the inside game, right? The inner game.
Yes.
Because the things we could change are the way that we think and behave.
Yes, we can change the way we react or we respond to things, especially things that are, quote, unpleasant to us. We can choose not to engage right away. We can choose to pause and take some time to think things through. So these, you're right, it is, those are inside games, or so to speak. And once you are able to start doing those things, what I found, it also brings forth other things that we do have the power to change. And so that's what I really like and believe about this whole concept of acceptance. When we accept people or things as they are, we are, it's a way of removing our focus and intensity toward that person or situation and bring it to our own lives and saying, okay, now what can I do? This person's behaving badly or poorly. You know, what are my choices? What are my options that are best for me? And I found this really helpful in dealing with what I call my foes and adversaries, you know, and in business. I used to personalize things so much. In business, and think that, you know, this person is acting out or doing this because somehow they're trying to get to me or to do something to me. What I've learned and was really helpful to me, especially I'm in real estate and I have tenants, and I've been dealing with a troublesome tenant, and I had a situation like this where this tenant was parking so many cars and interfering with the other tenants, and he was in denial and he was really disruptive. And the first thing that came to my mind was more the past is, sick the legal bloodhounds on him, you know, but I was able to pause and step back and look and say, you know, this person is really pursuing his personal interest. He's not trying necessarily to hurt me. He's overgrown his space, and in his own way, he's trying to go for his own survival, so to speak. So when I'm able to do that, I can diffuse my anger. In other words, that's about acceptance. Really requires us to really reduce our resentment and anger. And so what did I do? I did nothing. I chose that I didn't want to fight this battle. His lease was up in a few months. And I just sent him a notice, if you're going to stay beyond the lease, there's going to be a rent increase. So he moved out without a fight, without my spending money or time or energy. And what happens 2 weeks later, another tenant comes in and pays a 20% higher rent. So that was sort of a benefit, what I call, of my practicing acceptance in a very challenging situation. And that happens, you know, it happens where all these unexpected solutions somehow arise because we're not pressing and pushing. And that's where the control dynamic really comes in.
You know, that speaks to the third part of the Serenity Prayer, which is where we really get stuck. And that's the wisdom to know the difference between what we can change and what we cannot change. And you say in the book, the wisdom to know the difference doesn't come easily.
It's really challenging, and it's very, you know, trial and error. I know in my case, what I attempted to do, if there's an area of this, there's a lot of gray areas where we don't know if we can really change things significantly. So you can try to, you can make an effort to try to do something to change or whatever that may be. What I go by is if I'm doing that and I'm getting a resistance, or I'm feeling a, really an internal discomfort, then I know I'm probably pushing too much, you know. So that's the wisdom that I gained from maybe the experience. Another way, as I write in the book, are just very common ways through prayer, meditation, therapy, counseling, speaking to trusted others, to gain some insights and to some help. Is this something I really can control? What I've learned, Paul, and I was like we talked earlier, I was a control. I call myself a control freak extraordinaire, and that's why it took 20 years to write my Losing Control, Finding Serenity book. You know, it was a real personal journey, but what I've come to realize, there's really very few things that I can control in life, or that I really have any significant or meaningful power to change.
Right. And when you're a control freak, you sort of have an exaggerated sense of your own power.
Sure. And go ahead.
I was going to say, to what extent are most people control freaks, do you think?
We all control. I believe that is, you know, and I think some more than others. And I personally look back as how we were raised. When you think about it, we had our teachers telling us what to do all the time. We had our parents telling us what to do all the time. So we grew up thinking and believing that control works. That's a major part of life, because that we were sort of immersed in control, so to speak. Right. So the challenge is getting out of that and seeing other ways. And in my case, in my journey, quite honestly, it took a series over 5 years of traumatic setbacks, including major 5 surgeries for removal of cancer on my nose. I got to the point that I had to surrender because I didn't have the wherewithal to keep fighting the demons, you know.
Right.
What happened, I was out of my office, I don't know, 3 or 4 months. And when I came back, everything actually had survived. And actually, things were going okay. And I realized, you know, maybe all my controlling is not that productive or helpful. And the way from there for me is trusting and knowing that when I'm not pressing, not controlling, I'm able to sort of see the real life choices and options that are sort of better for me, number one, and things seem to come to me. I don't know if you've ever had that situation where when you finally give up trying to do something, some other thing that comes to you that's even better, you know. And I call that life's natural currents, you know, that when we're able to let go of control and accept what it is, it's sort of like frees life's natural currents. And then if we can be focused and aware, we can sort of intuitively sometimes step in at the right time or the right moment and sort of follow and be at one with those currents.
You know, I wonder how much it helps to grow older. And, you know, you have 3 sections in the book, and one of them is about accepting things outside yourself and other people, you know, parents and children and coworkers and all the different configurations of that. And then there's a section on, you know, accepting limitations and change and adversity. It seems like sometimes the hardest person to accept is oneself. Are we too hard on ourselves?
Yeah, I think we are for the most part. I know that I was, you know, very, you know, trying to seek perfection and trying to avoid failure. I was hard on myself. And I've come to realize that, you know, I have shortcomings and I have faults, and we all do. And by the way, one of the ways we were able to accept others is by understanding the faults and shortcomings in ourselves, we can, and the learning to accept those, we can accept those in others too. Or another way of saying it, if we can learn to accept the quirks, idiosyncrasies, faults of others, it helps us accept ourselves. So it is, to me, it's a continuing journey, but for me, it starts with identifying these so-called shortcomings or my pluses and my minuses. And in that process, very interesting, some of the things I thought were negative parts of me were actually positive, and vice versa. You know, there's a balance that I think we need to find. It's like, when is trying to help others, when do we become enabling, especially towards our children? When trying to do too much for them, really, when are we really hurting them or enabling them, you know? When does confidence, overconfidence become smugness and arrogance? So each of these characteristics, you know, there's sometimes these middle grounds, and I try, again, it's that space between that I write about, the space between. I try to be in that more moderate, balanced space between, because that's where my comfort is, that's where my serenity is, and that's sort of where my peace is.
You know, I wonder, and you bring the question up in your book about how accepting, our practicing acceptance helps us to actually make others better people. And it reminds me of something I read a long time ago, which is that acceptance is the most powerful catalyst for change, which is a paradox.
Yes.
And so I think that's what you're referring to here, is that when we accept things the way they are, we're actually supporting their evolution.
Right. I have a phrase is like, when we accept what is, we can discover what might be. And it's the same with others. When, think about it, you know, when someone accepts you or someone accepts me, it feels good, right? It feels good that I know, okay, I may have be quirky or something, but you know, when someone's accepting of me, not only does it feel good, but it generates some trust and openness that I feel safer maybe in revealing things about myself to them. So one of the gifts of acceptance that I write about is a very important one, is that it forges stronger bonds and connections and even intimacy between people or loved ones or children. You know, it really melds it together. So it's a gift to them, but it's a reciprocal gift. The gift of acceptance are gifts to ourselves as well. One of the things is if we can be sort of more humble, that part about acknowledging or realizing what's right for me, what the path it took for me is maybe not their path or was good for them. A little short story, my daughter Lana, who's 22, when she was about 12, I used to be a disciplined type A studier, you know, take good notes, sit up reading and quiet room. So I go in her bedroom, she's lying on the bed listening to loud music and not really studying for her test. So I'm pressing, hey, Lana, you know, you got a test coming up and, you know, this is not a good way to study, you know, that music, this and that. And she looked up at me. This is 12 years old. And she said, Daddy, I'm not the way you are. I process things differently. And that was such a truth, Paul. I was just like, whoa, she's right. She's so different than me. You know, Lana is very differently. She, and what I learned later, she needs to cram. She's one of these late night crammers because she told me, Daddy, I need the sense of urgency so that I can focus. Okay. I never saw that because I didn't have that issue.
You know? Right.
So it's really interesting. And so she's graduating from college. She's almost straight A's. She's got a job. She's a remarkable young woman I'm very proud of. And she's pursuing her own life and her own path. And I think, and I'm not trying to give myself credit, I'll give my wife more credit, is we've come to accept she has her own way, and that our responsibility and our duty is to try to protect her, try to instill good, you know, moral values and ethics, good manners, but to try to be her supporter, so to speak, and allow her to open up to us and to share things with us. Mm-hmm. And so it's the difference between being what I call parental guidance and parental control. And right. it's a difficult challenge, but that fear, future events already ruined, that we've got to deal with that.
Right, exactly.
Always.
So we're coming to the end of our time today, and I wanted to give you the freedom to tell our listeners what else you might want to share with them about acceptance, all of which is covered in your wonderful book, which I thoroughly enjoyed, The Gifts of Acceptance, Embracing People and Things as They Are. So is there anything you'd like to add to what we've touched on today? We've only touched on a very small part of what you touch on in the book.
Yes, thank you. I think fundamentally, is acceptance is a choice that each of us can make or not make. And what I try to share in the book through my experiences, stories of others, that when we choose acceptance, it just brings us these gifts, and it can bring us the serenity. And we're in such a divided world right now. And so at least why not start with our relationships and practice acceptance there. And it can bring remarkable and really unexpected benefits. So I really encourage people to make that choice of acceptance. It's difficult, and that's why I try to offer tools of how to better practice acceptance, so that maybe we can make our lives better, the lives of our loved ones, and the world a safer place.
Well, I want to thank you, Danny, for being on the show. There's so much more we could explore on this topic, but we have run out of time. And I want to make sure to tell our listeners about your website, which is www.danielamiller.com.
Yes.
DanielAMiller, all one word, .com. And what can they find on your website?
What I have on my website are at least 70 articles on the control and acceptance dynamics. I have some of my paintings and some of my poetry if they wish to read those. I have more information about the books, of course. The main source is, Amazon, or their favorite bookstore can order it. So
Okay.
my theme, and in closing, I'd like to say is, let's help acceptance go viral, right? Let's help make acceptance go viral, because we'll all be better because of that. And Paul, thank you so much for your pertinent questions. I really enjoyed our conversation this morning.
Me too. Thank you. And for those who tuned in to the Pathway Show late, this is your host, Paul O'Brien, author of Great Decisions, Perfect Timing, a book that shares the theme of pathways, which is personal and cultural evolution. In a second, I'll tell you how you can rewind and replay this interview whenever you want via the internet or as a free podcast. Today, we've been visiting with Danny Miller, author of The Gifts of Acceptance, Embracing People and Things as They Are. I want to say thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in to Pathways, which is broadcast and streamed via KBOO.FM on the internet Sunday mornings at 8:30 USA Pacific Time. Podcasts of today's show, which you can listen to and forward to others, are available for free at divination.com. That's spelled D-I-V-I nation.com, as well as via iTunes and other free podcast servers. This is Paul O'Brien reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Radio and podcasts. And thanks again to Danny Miller and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways conversation.